You are listening to a special edition podcast for The Ant-Man. I shrunk the superheroes. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to yet a special edition podcast for the Marvel's latest cinematic feature, Ant-Man, which I, at time of this recording, I learned that this movie has been in development before Iron Man. It's been developed, at least in development, for over 10 years. This is the movie that has been, you know, obviously this is the movie that Edgar Wright was supposed to do, but famously about, what, over a couple years ago?
About that, yeah, around the time of the last Comic-Con, I think.
Edgar Wright walked away from the project due to creative differences, so now, obviously, let a lot of things in the balance. But before I continue on my rambles, joining me are my co-hosts from Boston, Massachusetts. Not from Boston, I'm going to say Boston because it's all of Massachusetts is. Brian Powers. It's either that or Foxborough. It's one of those two.
Yeah, pretty much. Those are our two big stops, so, you know. I don't blame you for that, but thanks for having me. Hey.
And joining us, our resident redneck, Jonathan Cartwright. Jonathan.
Oh, fuck you, pal.
Says the guy whose current profile picture features the Confederate flag. Okay, let's
Hey, it's Hulk Hogan and the Confederate flag. Oh, I gotta be top of it.
All right, well, either way, we're here to discuss The Ant-Man, starring Paul Rudd, as well as a whole slash of characters whose names I don't remember right now because we're professionals. But
hey, don't forget about Luis, man. Luis.
Or Kirk Douglas, man.
Yeah, or starring Paul, a whole bunch
Michael
of characters.
Michael Douglas. Sorry.
Michael Douglas, not Kirk Douglas. Kirk Douglas is his father, right?
Yeah, he would have had a rather stiff performance.
We got Hank Gecko. I mean, Gordon Pym. I mean,
Okay, but either way, we're here to talk about Ant-Man. This is granted, the movie's been out for at least 2 weeks now. But if in case you haven't seen it for whatever fucking reason, spoilers will happen. We're gonna talk about spoilers. We're gonna talk about everything. We're gonna talk about all the MCU secrets, including a certain character that gets referenced that got me giddy in the theater. So. If you're not into that and you haven't seen it, it's The Ant-Man. Please leave now, come back later, or listen to our regular show, which will be following on the same day. So, like, check out for that. So, either way, let's get right in with the good guys. Personally, I going to this movie, I love Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd was good.
He was a fun Paul guy. Rudd. He seems like a nice guy.
You were surprised. Why were you surprised?
I'm not the biggest fan of Paul Rudd, depending on the movie. So I was pleasantly surprised by his performance in this one. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a good thing. I'm not trying to complain about him right now. I'm just saying it was a surprise to me.
Yeah. His Scott Lang really felt like a combination of Scott Lang and Eric O'Grady a little bit, which I think that was intentional.
Although, admittedly, it's sort of like the characters meets the predicament. Like he is the character of Scott Lang, but his predicament. His situation feels more like an Eric O'Grady.
But Scott Lang is the one who's a thief, though, in the comics. Like, he's the one who did...
I know that, but Eric O'Grady is also an unlikable asshole.
Yeah, so. Scott Lang in this movie is not an unlikable asshole. Like, you want to root
exactly.
for him.
Exactly.
Like, he's a mess. Like, his personal life is a mess, and, you know, he doesn't have the best of friends, but...
Hey, man.
I heard my cousin... Yeah, at this party, who told her homeboy, okay, to get right into that, those two sequences, and those are the parts that I feel like That was something Edgar. That felt like an Edgar Wright.
Oh, that was totally Edgar Wright.
Yeah, that was Edgar Wright.
Have you ever seen Drunk History? That's Edgar Wright right there.
That too. I actually thought of Shaun of the Dead, but Hot Fuzz or Shaun of It's one of those. Both of them actually.
Actually, all three: Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and To the End of the World.
Where they do that similar sort of thing. That's what I thought immediately. I feel like Edgar. That was a part from the Edgar Wright script that they got, and that to me was like, is it Luis? What was his name?
Luis.
Michael Pena is the actor who, to me, I love Paul Rudd, but Michael Pena stole the show whenever he was on the show.
He was so excellent to just see, like, you know, do his thing, and it was fantastic.
But I really enjoyed Michael Pena. He was really funny. And you know what? I was kind of skeptical, like, how do you play with size? You know, they really played with size really well.
Yeah, they definitely used the effects to their full potential on this one.
especially the gigantic Thomas the Tank Engine train. Like just seeing that, and then afterwards, and of course the giant fucking ant, which is now just hanging around the Lang house. It's just all kinds of creepy. But you know, I really enjoyed. And you know what? And this is going to sound like a negative, but, you know, after seeing Michael Douglas's performance, which a lot of people are saying he phoned it in, I don't think he did at all.
No, he did a good job.
I think he did a really good job. And he did a good job because while they didn't – at first I thought, like, at the beginning of the movie, one, we got Peggy Carter in makeup. Which is – you know what's interesting about that is that they got Peggy Carter to do makeup old – but the actor who was playing Howard Stark, that's the same actor from Iron Man 2.
Yeah, John Slattery.
John Slattery, who I know as from Mad Men, and that's all
Roger Sterling.
That's all I think of when I see him.
I saw him, and he almost looked like Walt fucking Disney to me. Looking like that.
Oh, with the mustache and everything?
Yeah, with the whole mustache and the motif going on.
Yeah.
In Iron Man 2.
And can we say that they did a really good job on de-aging Douglas in that first opening scene?
Yeah, that looked really good. Yeah, but what I really enjoyed about Michael Douglas's performance is that you got a sense that this isn't just some nerd. This guy has some closed-in anger issues, like this, like especially when he just straight up punch that guy in the face, and like, and you could see that unhinged rage that, you know, they obviously weren't alluding to. I thought they were alluding to him slapping her at the beginning of the movie, when he said you couldn't protect your wife. But we'll get more into Michael Douglas in a little bit, because there's a reason why I'm talking about Michael Douglas. but like his sort of, you can see the weight of his emotion. You can see, like, the burden he has and of who he was as an actor, who Hank Pym is as a character, and the despair he had in seeing where this shrinking technology could go. And I think he did more than just play the mentor role, and it really made me want to see, like, a Hank Pym movie starring Michael Douglas.
Dude,
another
period piece with him taking on, like, the Germans in Berlin.
You know what? That's another thing. I'll go right into it. It's like Marvel, and this is more of a Marvel thing. Marvel, like, they're doing a little bit with Agent Carter, but, like, between 1942. And 2008, theoretically, that's when the MCU starts, because when Iron Man 1 came out, there's that whole gap of empty space that we don't know about that they could play with.
Nothing happened.
Well, I mean, things did happen. I mean, like, obviously, you know, Tony's parents would kill the Hydra. But like, obviously, that's another the thing that wanted me is that we got that Hank Pym actually was Ant-Man in the 60s. Exactly. Fighting against communism.
He was up through the fall of the Berlin Wall. I mean, that was the one thing I took away from those stupid little Ant-Man prequel comic books that Marvel published. That really, it's like, oh, this isn't just Nazis anymore. This is actual fascist Germany and stuff going on. You know, and that's intriguing to me.
Yeah, like that was cool, and it made, and like, no disrespect to Paul Rudd, but I'm like, why can't we get that movie? I want that movie. You know, like, if taken up from Fox, the period pieces have worked. You can do a period piece and it'll be cool.
Marvel did one excellently with Captain America. It was World War II.
Exactly. Like, and, like, but you have
your repertoire.
Yeah, exactly. But Michael Douglas is great. I thought Evangeline Lilly was cool. You know, I thought she was okay. You know, like, she, it's not her fault, but the writers kind of put her in the typical female character. You know, she's got to be weak and this. This and
I actually really enjoyed her character. I enjoyed the fact that she was kicking Scott's ass for most of the movie. I thought that was great.
I enjoyed the aspect of bringing mixed martial arts into a Marvel movie. that and seeing it looked a little awkward seeing Scott doing grapple moves and stuff like that. So
yeah.
But overall, I think there's a lot more. Ant-Man was very funny. I thought some of the jokes were kind of dry, but when it was really funny, it was really fucking funny. What do you guys? What were some of the things you liked in Ant-Man, guys? You go ahead. I've spoken a lot.
Okay. Go ahead,
John. Sir. No, John, you go ahead, man.
All right. I was going to say is I loved a lot of the you know, the obligatory in jokes they did. You know, you had the Milgram, the hotel.
I knew that was a thing. I'm like, why does that name sound like, familiar?
And you know, because he was one of the earlier, I think, one of the earlier artists. And then when you had Yellow Jacket, the villain, I can't remember the guy's name.
His name is Corey Stoll.
Okay,
His actual character's name was Darren Cross.
Yeah, Darren Cross. You know, he was talking about showing all that. And, you know, we see all and you show the footage of Ant-Man kicking the shit out of people, and you know, showing hey, Ant-Man, because he's small doesn't mean he can't kick ass, and he's just going on. The speech, he's like, yeah, I know, it's fiction. It's like, tales to astonish. And I cracked up at that, and I was like...
I thought that was a nice little it was forced.
It was a little forced, but it was still funny to hear. And again, you know, Michael Peña, God damn it, that man stole the show. Paul Rudd, you know, surprisingly, made me enjoy his rendition of Scott Lang. I love the little girl that played Cassie, even though I know she won't be stature anytime soon.
Oh, I would sell my left and right nut to see that happen. young Avengers is something that I want more than anything out of this.
And that might be one of the first movies they do if they take a rest, late, you know, after the whole thing. But everything just felt right. It just seeing his training, him in the backyard constantly exploding up when he runs into the various types of ants. For the first time, getting the shit scared out of him. Antony was a good character in there. Magic
character
for a flying, you know, for a flying ant. I will have to say this: I really thought that the Yellow Jacket suit was pretty tight looking. I could see where it could be considered a threat. I mean, especially when it was small and. Was firing the lasers and was taking out everybody in front of him.
Why wasn't that Yellow Jacket in Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom? That would have been awesome.
Yeah, and then the fact that when they were fighting that little box and he talked, you know, said something, I'm going to disintegrate you, and the phone goes,
oh, the disintegration.
Disintegration by the Cure. And I was cracking up so hard. I will say this was my first movie to see in 3D because when I went to go see it, my kids and wife went to go see Minions, in a different theater in the same cinema, and I went ahead and saw the 3D because it ran at the same time, and I will say this: it looked really awesome in 3D. I will give
even
it that.
Even the shrinking scenes, because I saw it in 2D.
Oh yeah, the shrinking scenes, especially when he went into the quantum verse, in that part of the movie, it really actually did a good job on the 3D. The shrinking and stuff was awesome in the 3D. I give him credit for that. I still probably won't see much 3D after this, but for this, it was worth it. I do give this, like I said on Facebook, I really enjoyed everything about it. It's in my top five of Marvel Cinematic. Probably at number five, but you know, still, yeah, I found it highly enjoyable. I loved when they were like, okay, you need to go to Tony Stark's warehouse to get this part.
That was a great reveal.
And he popped through and he sees the big, you fucking son of a bitch, this is the Avengers headquarters. I was cracking up. And yes, and even though it was the Falcon, I thought it was awfully cool that they showed the Falcon coming in, keeping things tied in, and it was just and hilarious. And he was like, hey guys, please don't tell, I would appreciate it if you don't tell Cap about this.
Of course, Cap's going to find out about it.
You know, of course. And then somebody's like, hey, how about we just talk about how the fact that I just took on an Avenger and didn't die. And I loved it. And that and when they're like, hey, why don't we go ahead and call the Avengers? And Douglas was just like, no, I think they're too busy dropping a city on the countryside worst.
Yeah, and then, of course, his hatred. Like, you can already, like, that hatred, that sort of rivalry with the Stark family is there.
Yeah.
Why, can we get Michael Douglas and Robert Downey Jr. in a scene together, please?
Oh, go
can
God,
we do
I
that,
would
please?
Love that.
They're in the same fucking universe.
That would be awesome, just to see those two square off as him and Stark. That would be awesome. This was a good summer Marvel film. It made up for I'm not going to say major misfire, but the minor misfire of Ultron, even though I enjoyed that movie. This just had more of that Iron Man 1 feel to me. And I was grinning from ear to ear. It was a good movie from beginning to end. The reveal and the mid credit scene where she gets when Evangeline Lilly's character gets the wasp suit. So we're going to see the friggin' wasp sometime here in the near future, and
according to Kevin Feige, no plans for Civil War at least, which is like really.
I know.
Like anytime it comes with female superheroes outside of Captain Marvel, we've heard shit, and it's it's like Black Widow. The hell?
Like Civil War. I'm kind of going. They don't need to add any more characters to it because it's going to be already. It might as well not even be called Captain America. You know,
it's Avengers 2.5. That's what it is. It's Avengers 2.5.
Basically, but it was a nice, and it was also a nice lead into for Civil War, the end credits. I like.
Hold on. Don't. We'll talk about the.
I know. I'm
jumping
with
the gun, John.
I'm not trying to jump with the gun.
Here, let's take it away.
Let me finish. Nick.
Oh,
go ahead.
God damn.
Quit.
Anywho. Hey! I didn't interrupt you when you were talking about every goddamn thing under the sun. You let me talk, damn it. Can we banhammer him, please?
I'm quiet now.
Okay, fine. John?
Someone has to do Taser's job.
Oh my god. Taser would have broke down laughing and quit after this point, goddammit. Anyway,
I am. Go ahead.
So... let's see. I really enjoyed Paul Rudd's characterization of Ant-Man. Like Ben pointed out, he was more of a hybrid of both Scott Lang and Eric O'Grady. And I enjoyed the fact that while he is continuing and trying to break out of the fact that, you know, he's just got out of prison and stuff, he still finds himself sort of falling through these trappings. And then it's sort of like he sort of knows where he's at. Like, for example, the scene at the very beginning where he gets a job at Baskin-Robbins. And the guy brings it in, and he thinks it's like, he's cool and everything, but you're still fired. But you want to get one of those mango twists out there, but you know, I'll just look the other way. And you think, like, dude, he's going to go. He takes the drink with him anyway. You know. And I thought that was just one of the little moments I thought was funny with his characterization. That being said, I also enjoyed his interactions with Paxton, the second husband to his wife. And the fact that he's a police officer and he's a con and stuff, and they have this rivalry going, I really enjoyed their interactions. And also the turn at the end where, you know, they're actually sitting down and being civil to each other, and then they're both just like, this is really weird, isn't it? It's like, yeah, it's super awkward. And for that matter, I also enjoyed, oh shit, what's her name? Oh, I'm going to hate myself for this. Yep, nope, it's gone. The person who played Judy Greer. Thank you. That was it. Judy Greer, who played Maggie, you know, Lang's ex-wife and stuff. I love her on Archer.
She's the one who played Janet?
No, she's the one who played Maggie, Scott Lang's
ex-wife. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, she was in Jurassic World, too.
Yeah. Well, I love her from Archer. She plays Cheryl / Carol.
Yeah.
I really enjoy her in that. The Haley Atwell and John Slattery cameo is really cool. I enjoyed that they flashback.
Why wasn't it the guy from Agent Carter though? Like that's the thing. Like the guy they casted for.
I honestly don't know.
Like
maybe
if you're gonna age up Peggy, just why not do this? Like I don't know. Let's
maybe because they already used him once and they felt obligated they have to use him again, or maybe they just felt too lazy to go look for an older stand-in for Haley Atwell and they decided to stick with what they had. I don't know.
It's weird.
Yeah.
I know. Also, I enjoyed Lang's crew, you know, Michael Pena, and not just him, but the T.I.
I didn't know that was T.I. until I saw the credits.
Yeah, right?
He was fun.
I'm sitting there in the theater, I'm like, is that fucking T.I.? The fuck is T.I. doing in this movie? And he turns out to be Dave, this carjacker, and when he steals the police car from the benefit, I thought it was hilarious. And I'm going to try to get the name right. David... Desmalchian, who played the other member, Kurt, the computer hacker.
The French guy?
I think he was Russian.
Oh, it was Russian? Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's there Russian, yeah. I think that was him. Anyway, I enjoyed the crew. They all had their own personalities and their own functions, and I thought that was really cool because, you know, they could have just easily fallen into the background. But also, the fact that this movie, going in, I didn't really know what to expect, but the fact that it took the beginning premise of most superhero movies and sort of turned it into this, like, heist flick at the same time.
Yeah,
was something I really enjoyed.
It's all about that one final scene. It's all one build up to that.
Yeah, yeah. There's a steady build up and a payoff there, and they reach it, and it's on the level of these heist movies, like you know, like Ocean's 11 and stuff. It's building towards something that doesn't just require you to go in and knock down a bunch of buildings and shit. It requires finesse and skill, and you see him train for this, and that's what I really enjoyed out of this was that. A, you saw that he didn't just, you know, come into this. He had to train that, he had to work at it, and the fact there's a dedicated sequence where he has to put these skills to the test, and he uses all of the skills and all of the ants as well, which I thought was cool. He found a use for every single one type of them. R.I.P. Anthony.
Yes, R.I.P. Anthony.
And I enjoyed the banter and the fight with the Falcon. That was a really cool sequence where he's like, Scott's shrunken on the roof. He's like, I don't think he can see me.
I can see you.
I can see you. He's like, he can see me. And he warps back up again. He's like, hi, I'm Scott. I said, can you just tell him your name?
You know what? You know what's going to be funny, because to cut you in a little bit, is when because Scott is, Ant-Man is confirmed for Civil War. I want to see how Scott reacts to being around a whole bunch of superheroes in a crazy situation. Or if Ant-Man in Infinity Gauntlet. I think that's where, like, I'm going to go ahead and jump the gun a little bit. Like, I don't think this movie deserves a sequel, not because of money, but just because I'm like, it's Ant-Man, and not everybody deserves a sequel. I think, like, for a supporting character...
They do plenty with the Hulk and stuff.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think he should become the new Hulk, but I think, like, he could be, like, that spice in, like a supporting superhero movie that you need for comedy, which kind of sucks if you want more Ant-Man movies, but I don't think that people are going to be clamoring for more Ant-Man movies. Like, this certainly wasn't Guardians of the Galaxy numbers from what I last saw.
Yeah, no.
It did good. It did well enough, but not like, you know, I don't think
it did. Well, it's done so far. It's done well so far, 2 weeks in a row. The number one the first weekend, even though that was disappointing, and it's doing, and it did very well.
They took so it's held number one. It's like the biggest disappointment of the Marvel franchise.
But they've said it's
made
like 2 weeks.
Millions of dollars.
Yeah, 2 weeks in a row, it's number one at the box office. You know, and they're still going, oh, it's a disappointment. It's not Guardians money. And it's like,
oh, but the thing is, like, it's diminishing returns. Marvel, like, realistically, Marvel and Disney cannot think they're going to hit Guardians or Avengers money every single time. They need, like, if this is, and we're going to get to this on our regular show, so we won't get into it, but if they cannot expect to keep up success, like, this was a success. Let's not get let's kid ourselves. They cannot keep it. They cannot realistically expect, like, continued excess, especially going into 2017 when the market is going to be saturated like nobody's fucking business. Assuming that Disney, that DC and Warner Brothers actually gets their shit together and actually produces the films that they said that's going to come out that year. But either way, Brian, continue before we digress.
I'll wrap things up in that saying to cap off. I really enjoyed Evangeline Lilly as Hope Van Dyne. Like I said, her scenes with Hank and Scott were, I thought, really well played out. Especially considering that they keep hammering on. They don't love the fact that she's really the one who's more qualified to be Ant-Man, or Ant-Woman as it was, over Scott Lang. And, you know, for a while you're questioning why the hell isn't she the one taking over. It's in the same vein as Scott Lang going, why don't we just call the Avengers? It's an obvious move. Why don't we just make her the Ant-Man?
Yeah,
and we obviously learn later on why that is. Because, you know, Tim has, like, almost PTSD and grief about losing his wife and such, so he doesn't want to risk his daughter as well. And Scott Lang is on some level expendable, where she is not, as to at least...
That was a very powerful scene.
I thought it was really well done. And Corey Stoll as Darren Cross. I enjoyed the fact that he was just blatantly evil / mad scientist, and he didn't really apologize for it. You know, he sort of reveled in it, and I enjoyed that. I wish we'd seen more of the build-up to that point, because once we get in, it's like full-on, he's evil. Like, just off the
bat. Yeah, and I guess with that, we're going to go right into the negative, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
And I have two big negative. And the first one, Corey Stoll. He was in House of Cards, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Okay,
yes.
Okay. Because first season, yeah, he's the one. I'm not gonna say it because in case you haven't seen House of Cards, but I reckon, like, I didn't know the actor's name, but I'm like, that guy looks familiar. But that, and so does the voice. But like, you know who Corey Stahl reminded me of, or Darren Cross's character reminded me of?
Let me guess, Obadiah Stane.
He's Obadiah Stane. He's basically that. Yeah. That's the weakest point of the plot for me. The heist part was excellent. The points with Pym, those are excellent. But like, they talk about him losing his mind because he's been shrinking, but you never see that. You never see any sort of like, and the same thing with Obadiah. He's kind of just evil when he turns evil. Like, but even then, that, like, there was a great reveal to when he was evil.
I mean, even then, you saw like he had this two-faced moments. This is just all one face, and it's all
crazy. Like, you can tell from the beginning. Yeah, this guy's evil. Like, when, and by the way, anybody catch the Zoolander reference by the model lookout?
Yeah, I thought it looked familiar, and it wasn't until
this
I saw it.
This is the center
meme
for ants. It's actually the exact same building too, which I find really funny.
Is it really?
It's the exact same building.
Yep. Oh my god, that's amazing!
That's probably another Edgar Wright.
Possibly, but it's Corey Stahl as Darren Cross / Yellow Jacket, which is really weird to say. I didn't like, you know, he just was a bland, and it's a problem Marvel has had outside of Loki and, you know, to be determined Thanos, heck, even with Ultron, they're all, a lot of them are expendable, a lot of them are poorly written, a lot of them have one agendas that make them unwatchable, you know, looking back. They're all one note. They can make these complex, very interesting, very engaging superheroes. See Scott Lang and see Hank Pym and see Hope Van Dyne. But when you get to Corey Stahl, he's like, I'm evil and I'm going to sell it to Hydra because I can. Because fuck you, Pym. You weren't there for me, Dad. You weren't proud of me.
You spurned my genius and you didn't love me.
That's what it was. He was having daddy issues. And like, if you gave me more context for that, I could buy that. But because you present him as a dick from the start, giving me no sympathy for the villain at all to understand where he's coming from. So then he just comes off as bland and generic. And his plan, while cool, like to see, like that. That's actually, like, when you think about what he wanted to do and give that to Hydra, one I would have loved. I kind of hope.
By the way, stoked to see Hydra again.
Yeah, that was actually nice. to see Hydra, like this.
They're not what they once were, but they're still paying. You know, that's like okay.
Yeah, I kind of hope we get like a shrinking suit somewhere in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 3. As a reference to Ant-Man, but either way, of course, that was weakest, and then that whole plot, you know, just was really weak. Other than that, I think that's the only complaint I really like. Legit complaint I had was Corey Stahl, as Ant-Man and Yellow Jacket. You know, I think he did a fine performance. He definitely hammed it up at more. He hammed it up. A lot more, but I think he did a fine enough job. It's just like, it's more a problem with Marvel writing and Marvel dictating for some reason outside of Loki. And even, you know, Loki was like, for the only reason they brought back Loki was because of fan demandment.
They had to go back to reshoots for Thor 2 when they realized how much of a draw he was.
But, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And even then, the main villain in Thor 2 was bland and boring and very simple. Ultron was like that. You know, like, they have outside, and again, Thanos is to be determined, but even again, like, if the trend continues, we'll see, we know where this is going. That's the only real disappointment I had was Corey Stahl. I did like the fight sequences he had at the end with Hank Pym. Mm-hmm.
But scenes were really well done in this.
Especially the comedic of, it's all big and epic, and then you pull back, and then the train just falls. Like, it's just... That guy,
How about when Yellow Jacket got hit in the bug light?
That was great. Yeah, that got a huge laugh. of course, that was the only real big problem I had with it. I really wish there was more. They would have given us more time with him. Because they give us, like, he's been taking the serum, he's losing his mind, and we never get a sense of that losing his mind.
He's already gone and away. Yeah, it's out of here.
Yeah. So, like, that to me is the only thing that took this away from being a good movie, a fun movie to a good movie. So that's about it. And, you know, yeah, That's the only complaint I really had. Thinking back at the movie, is that is this Corey Stahl? And I mean, the plot of that section was really just the drama between Hank and Darren was basically Tony and Obadiah from it's basically Iron Man 1. Billionaire industrialist gets a lot of tech. The other guy wants the tech, can't get the tech, so he builds his own. So he builds his own tech, and you know, it's gonna sell it off to the masses.
Even then, I mean, Darren Cross does what Obadiah Stane couldn't. He replicates technology. He doesn't have to steal it. He has it.
Yeah.
The matter of fact is, Obadiah isn't inherently crazy. This guy is.
Yeah, exactly.
And we don't see, and whereas we could see Obadiah and how he's like begins to lose control and realizes he's backed into a corner. He's forced to make a move in order to preserve his well-being. This guy's just, I'm nutty as a squirrel and I'm gonna prove it. Here we go with the yellow jackets, and he just starts killing people. And it's like that first dude in the fucking restroom when he was there. You know, he catches the guy in the bathroom and he zaps him, and he's a little splat on the ground. And it's just like, well. This guy was never sane to begin with.
Yeah.
Because he adheres to a higher law, the laws of nature. And, you know, that's all good, but we don't see that. That's really the problem. He's not evolved. I mean, like Obadiah, you see, point A to point B. This one's just point B. There's no real rhyme or reason to it. So, that being said, that's really also my only biggest complaint. The only other thing I'll say is a couple of plot things, I suppose. One of them being during the big climactic sequence and stuff, when Darren Cross is getting away in the helicopter and Hank Pym's not Hank Pym. God, it's going to be terrible. Scott Lang, he's flapping around outside the helicopter, and he gets back in, and Darren Cross is just in the fucking suit, despite the fact that it was shrunk down and he had no means with which to enlarge the suit, nor did I think he had enough time to put the suit on. That was just kind of a nitpick to me, one of those Cinema Sins things where it's like, well, why does he do that? How does he do that? Which I can overlook. But at the same time, I'm like, how the fuck did he get that out of the little glass thing he had in it? I really don't get it, but I suppose it's neither here nor there. Yeah, other than that, there's really no big complaints to this one. They're pretty much... Yeah, I mean, other than the fact, I guess, and I hesitate to go here, the fact that when I went into the theater, this is a personal thing to me, at the same time as I enjoyed it, there was a sense of sameness and familiarity with it.
You know, that's what I'll say is that, like, and not a negative thing, too, but, like, this is going to be forever the movie, but what if Edgar Wright had done it? Because there are flashes of it in there. There are instances of what Edgar Wright would have done.
Michael Peña's tip montages are just fantastic.
Yeah, they're, you know, arguably one
last
of the
last vestiges of...
Arguably, along with that and the final like train sequence, where like those feel like Edgar Wright ideas, I just can't help but thinking, what would this movie have looked like if Edgar Wright actually was allowed to do what he wanted to do?
We're playing what if with that forever.
Yeah, and it sucks, and it sucks to the detriment, because I think the director did a fine job with, because like it was basically like he had to work extremely fucking fast, before the movie had to go out, but. I can't deny that, like, what if? You know, it's, I mean, like, we've stopped, I think people have stopped asking that question, like, well, what if Ed Norton was there instead of
Mark Ruffalo?
Yeah. Exactly. Like, how cool would it have been? And I think people have stopped asking that now because Ruffalo has delivered such amazing performances in two Avengers movies. But, you know, this one I think it'll be harder because it's a director's vision, and we know what Edgar Wright is capable of. We've seen it, and it would have been interesting to see what he would have done with the guy who can control ants and shrink. But who knows?
Yeah,
it's something we're gonna have to learn to adapt to, because you know this has been happening for years, even as far back as Terrence Howard getting the axe in Iron Man, and then bringing in Don Cheadle and stuff. You know, there are these instances where we're always asking what if, because you know when your comic book company has a line of comics called What If, you know there's gonna be some questions running around about how could have this panned out or that panned out. But at the same time, I still enjoyed the movie overall. Like I said, the Darren Cross villain's only one of really few complaints.
That was about my only complaint, too. I agree with you pretty much with everything that's been said.
There was one other thing, and I can't remember what the hell it was that kind of irked me. But then I guess it must not have been really important. So, oh well.
All right, you guys, John, let's wrap us up on the negative stuff. Go.
Pretty much as you've already said, it's pretty much echoed my opinion. Cross was, I kept thinking, and this is Obadiah Stane, and for good or ill, it was, he did an entertaining job, but I kept thinking Obadiah Stane, and I was like, what if Edgar Wright had been able to get a hold of this movie, and what would he would have been able to do? And it's about all I had. Just like I said, I had no really any major complaints from beginning to end, which that really shocked the hell out of me. For a Marvel movie, because I usually sometimes will have a major complaint on something. Even Winter Soldier had a couple of moments where I was like, and that's like my number one favorite Marvel movie. So, but other than that, that's about it.
All right. So now let's talk about the nerdy Andre from Black Nerd Comedy. Please don't sue me. The nerd stuff, the MCU stuff. Did anybody fucking catch the Spider-Man reference?
Yes, I did. Yeah. That was hilarious.
I totally caught that. You want to tell me that again?
I think it's Falcon, or like I can't remember the context. This has been 2 weeks since I've seen the movie.
But it was in the conversation at the end of the movie
it was doing another Michael Pena sequence, and he goes, he was talking to one of the reporters, like, we got a guy who can swing and climb on walls, and like, who fucking else does that but fucking Spider-Man?
He's the wall crawler.
Yeah, so I thought that, I kind of got scared, like, they mentioned Spider-Man, like, that's the first official mention of Spider-Man in the MCU, so ever hinting that Spider-Man is going to appear in Civil War in some fashion. But of course, what did y'all think of the post-credit sequence?
Oh God, I was loving it.
I was like, intrigued.
Yeah, it set up perfectly for the next one.
I don't think that's what shit.
Well,
it was a very vague scene.
It sets up stuff in the way of how Civil War is going to be handled in.
No, yeah, it doesn't. But, how you find you? Well, I mean,
for example, when they're talking about how. Story. Well, hang on, John. Damn it.
No, I'm sorry. I was actually clearing my throat legitimately. Go ahead, sir.
Anyway, it's the fact that, when they mentioned that they're not sure if Stark will be able to help because of the Accords and stuff. And it's interesting because, A, it implies that Steve and Tony are still talking to one another.
Which means, why is it called Civil War?
Yeah, they've already been implemented, and this thing is still about the heroes being talking to each other. But I think it's more of a matter of how the heroes will be perceived and how they respond to the Accords. I mean, obviously, that's the main crux of Civil War, in that, there is this thing. How do you react? Whose side are you on? But the fact that Tony and Steve are still talking to each other, it's interesting. I'm not sure how that's going to pan out, but it's interesting. So I really don't know what else to do with that, It's obviously setting up a different Civil War. Yeah. I mean, that much is patently clear.
Yeah. How? I mean, who knows? Maybe Tony ends up siding with the government anyways, but it just... John, you go ahead. Or Brian, I don't know if you want to continue.
No, I was done. Well, I really don't have it, except for the fact that... And I should have mentioned this with my dislikes or the bad stuff. The total almost exclusion of Janet Van Dyne, a.k.a. Wasp, was...
I agree.
I would have liked to at least seen who they... I mean, they could have gotten someone to play her easy, and they just totally sort of glossed over her.
We got one appearance of her in the back on that final mission she had.
And we didn't even really get to see a clear shot of her face, you know? So...
Yeah, so that couldn't have been Catherine Zeta-Jones. It would have been kind of cool.
Oh, I would have loved that. Catherine Zeta-Jones.
The end credit scene I liked simply because, as I've said, my two favorite movies have been the Cap movies because, they've just come out of the block and just, go with it on everything. And just seeing that you got Cap, Winter Soldier, and Falcon there, and it looks like, okay, what did Bucky get himself into? And, well, it was a small scene.
I mean, like, if it's like the comics, he probably blew up Philadelphia.
More than likely, you never know.
I remember on the road to reading Civil War, like that was one of the things that was cited in the comics was the fact that one, the Hulk trashing Las Vegas, which we know is not going to happen because Hulk is AWOL somewhere, but Bucky but the Winter Soldier blowing up a major city. These costume characters are getting out of hand. I did. I mean, like, obviously he's talking about Ant-Man when Falcon goes, I know a guy. Like, that's an Ant, like, so that, like, that's how Ant-Man gets in the movie, which is going to be cool.
Yeah, but it's always cool to see, you know, Chris Evans back in any form as Cap.
Yeah,
know, so.
I can't wait to see how I can't wait to see how Chris Evans and Scott and Paul Rudd and General Ross too.
Oh dear Lord.
I always forget that one.
General Ross makes his return to the MCU with no Hulk. I'm hoping we get Red Hulk. I really want Red Hulk.
I know. That's kind of what I'm hoping for.
I'm hoping Red Hulk. Come on. I hope in between, like, Incredible Hulk, he's turned red somewhere. We just haven't heard about it yet. But either way, thank you for listening, guys. Let us know what your thoughts on Ant-Man and if you would be down to see a 60s period piece movie starring the Pyms as they fight communism / Hydra. Because they didn't say Hydra. They straight up said communism.
Communism.
So let us know what you think. And, of course, this is not the only special edition podcast for next in about 2 weeks. Fantastic Four comes out. Get on the hype train. Get on the hype train, people. It's happened. Fantastic Four is in 2 weeks. Until then, be sure to check out our regular schedule programming, which also will be the same day of this episode. So let us know what you think. All right, everybody, have a good night.
Night.
Oh, baby.